Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, and I, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Connect workshop, Understanding Treatment-Related Rash and Dry Skin. It's a very important topic that many of you who are undergoing cancer treatments are experiencing, and we're going to cover as many of these topics as possible for you on today's program. Now, today is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations, and it really is because of our collaboration that we've been able to reach so many of you on the call today. We have on the call today over 531 participants, and you come from all of the United States. You come from all different counties and regions and parts of the United States, and we also have international participants today from Bahrain, from Canada, from the Netherlands, the United Kingdom, and Venezuela. So truly you are, this is an international call, really, from all over the world. And we really would like to thank you for your participating today and for being on the call for the next hour with us. Today's workshop is made possible by Bristol-Myers Squibb, and I really want to thank them for supporting this program. I'd like to turn your attention for a moment to the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials is information about all of the services of Cancer Care, about the program today, the topics we'll be covering and the speakers, and there also is information about all the different collaborating organizations. They are a terrific resource for you in addition to Cancer Care, and you have all their free 800 numbers and websites, and these are all free services that are listed for you. Now, there also is an evaluation form, which is very important for all of you and for all of us as well, that you complete that evaluation form at the end of the program today. I have to say that your feedback means a great deal to us as we plan future programs. Indeed, the topics that we select, we try very hard to listen to what you suggest, and we try to implement the suggestions that you make. Indeed, today's topic was one that many of you have asked us to offer, and so here it is. And you're all living with different issues and concerns, and we can offer those programs for you that would best meet your needs, dependent on what you recommend that we do. So we really do take your recommendations very seriously. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Mario Lacouture. And Dr. Lacouture is Associate Attending Physician, Dermatology Service, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And Dr. Lacouture is going to address how cancer treatments affect your skin, the role of a dermatologist in managing rash and dry skin, practical tips to manage rash and dry skin, and sun safety tips during cancer treatments. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Lacouture.
Welcome, and thank you for attending the Cancer Care Conference on Understanding Treatment-Related Rash and Dry Skin. My name is Mario Lacouture, and I am a dermatologist at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. It is important to keep in mind that of the 1.6 million people diagnosed with cancer every year, approximately two-thirds will develop some type of dermatologic condition associated with their anti-cancer treatment. Even more importantly, almost half of people diagnosed with cancer every year will have some type of pre-existing skin condition even before they start therapy. These conditions include itching, dry skin, or skin infections such as fungal infection of the toenails or bacterial infections of the skin. Of the 1.6 million people that are diagnosed with cancer, approximately two-thirds will receive chemotherapy, about half will receive radiation, and most will have a surgical procedure as part of their diagnosis and treatment, all of which can result in new skin problems or make existing skin problems even worse. It is important to communicate with your primary oncologist and their team about any dermatologic or skin problem that you may experience, since only about 8% of cancer survivors or people living with cancer end up seeing a skin specialist or a dermatologist. And the consequences of these dermatologic conditions are considered to be fourfold. first, they can affect people psychosocially, because usually people can develop rashes or skin problems in areas of the body that are exposed to other people. And therefore, people feel a sense or they feel a loss of privacy about their diagnosis. Secondly, they carry an additional cost, because many of the medications used for dermatologic conditions are costly and in some cases are not covered by insurance companies. Third, some of these conditions can be very painful or itchy, limiting your ability to do your daily activities. And finally, some skin conditions such as rashes or painful blisters in the hands and feet or itching of the skin or skin infections can result in discontinuation or interruptions of anti-cancer treatments. And, of course, the last thing we want to do if an anti-cancer treatment is working is interrupting or stopping it because of a skin condition. Some of you may be wondering, how come so many people are affected by skin conditions when they receive anti-cancer therapies? And the answer to that is that the skin is the largest organ in your body, and it is responsible for many different functions, including protecting your skin against infections from bacteria and other microorganisms, protecting you from ultraviolet radiation or other energy coming from the sun, maintaining the temperature inside your body, and forming vitamin D. The skin is also an organ that is constantly renewing itself. In fact, every 28 days, you will have a completely new layer of skin. So if we take those observations, along with the known fact that most anti-cancer treatments, including chemotherapies or the so-called targeted therapies, as well as radiation, in which what they do is they block rapidly growing cells, what we see is that rapidly growing cells in the skin cannot be differentiated by these drugs. Therefore, they are also affected, resulting in problematic conditions of the skin, which include rashes, itching, dry skin, painful blisters or swelling in the hands and feet, as well as skin infections. In addition, it is also important to remember that your hair and your nails are also formed from your skin. Therefore, any anti-cancer treatment that affects the skin will ultimately affect your hair and nails. Indeed, with some anti-cancer treatments, your nails can be significantly affected, causing painful inflammation around the nails or lifting and loss of the nails. If you experience any of these skin conditions, it is very important to bring them to your attention of the doctor that is treating you, because they may be able to do things to mitigate or prevent these conditions even before they happen. Or you can also consider seeking an evaluation by a dermatologist that is knowledgeable in skin conditions resulting from anti-cancer treatments. Dermatologists can be found at the American Academy of Dermatology website, aad.org, or you can see your local dermatologist. It is important, especially with some medications or anti-cancer drugs that frequently cause dermatologic conditions, to seek an evaluation from a dermatologist so that they can manage skin conditions that may arise during your therapy, and your oncologist can focus on what is the most important part of your treatment, which is controlling the cancer. Having said that, it is important to know that there are practical things that you can do to manage rash and dry skin during your treatment. For example, if you are receiving a drug that makes you more sensitive to the sun, it is important to use sun protective clothing, broad brim hats, for example, long sleeves and long pants. You can also use clothing that has sun protection in it, and there are several brands of such products that are available at many different stores or online. You should also use sunscreen. And by using sunscreen, what I mean is that you should check in the label to make sure that it is a sunscreen with a sun protection factor of at least 30, and it should be applied every 2 hours or every hour if swimming or sweating. keep in mind that using sunscreens is important, but it is important to apply enough sunscreen. And for every application, for you to cover your entire body, you should use as much as the amount contained in a shot glass or a golf ball. So use sufficient amounts of sunscreen when you are applying. Also, it is important to maintain moisture in your skin. And by maintaining moisture, I mean using a moisturizer that you can obtain in a pharmacy that you should apply within 15 minutes of bathing or showering. Moisturizers come in three different types, either lotions, creams, or ointments. Most people prefer lotions because they are easier to spread, but ointments that are very thick and come in a tub are more difficult to spread but provide better protection or better moisturization. Recently, there are also some moisturizers that are available as sprays, and I find these very valuable or very convenient for people, especially those that are not accustomed to applying moisturizers or creams. Also importantly, keep in mind that you should always use fragrance-free detergents or soaps to wash your clothes or when bathing or showering so that these fragrances do not dry or irritate your skin any further. Another important consideration to manage any rash that may occur during your treatment is inform your oncologist and their team or a dermatologist if you have one as early as possible, because when a rash appears during chemotherapy or radiotherapy, it is easier to treat the earlier in which interventions are managed or the earlier in which creams or oral medications are instituted. In the majority of cases, most of the rashes caused by chemotherapy can be treated with either creams containing antibiotics or corticosteroids or tablets containing antibiotics or corticosteroids. And again, keeping in mind that the most important part of all of these conditions that may result from your chemotherapy or radiation is that you can stay on treatment, you can maintain your quality of life, and that you can continue living your life as normal as possible without letting these conditions that result from your treatment interfere with your daily activities. By communicating frequently with your oncologist and their team, using sun protective and gentle skincare recommendations, as we have discussed, in the majority of cases, you will be able to continue your treatment without having to have those modifications of the drug and maintaining your quality of life. I hope that this has been very helpful to all of you, and knowing that communication, early intervention, and frequent application of the topical creams or ointments or medications recommended by your oncologist are the three key factors in allowing you to stay on your treatments and maintaining the utmost health of your skin, hair, and nails. Thank you very much, Carolyn.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. LaCourture. That was an excellent presentation, very comprehensive in scope, and just really appreciate this your very excellent presentation. And our next speaker is Dr. Stuart Fleischman, and Dr. Fleischman is Founding Director, Cancer Support Services, Continuum Cancer Centers of New York, Accreditation Surveyor, American College of Surgeons Commission on Cancer. And Dr. Fleischman is going to address the multidisciplinary approach to managing rash and dry skin, the importance of communicating with your healthcare team, quality of life concerns, and additional tips. And it's my pleasure now to turn the program back over to Dr. Fleischman.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. Dr. LaCourture gave a very good summary of exactly what the problem is here with skin problems that happen during chemotherapy and radiation therapy. It can't be said enough times that to the people who are not familiar with this, it seems rather trivial. And I have had patients and families say, we're not worried about our skin, we're worried about getting through treatment. But as Dr. LaCourture said, it is often the skin reaction that prevents folks from getting a full dose of chemotherapy or a full dose of radiation therapy that's going to help control the cancer. So it isn't trivial. And most people, when they hear that they're going to need chemotherapy or radiation therapy, one of the first things they think about is about losing their hair. And skin, hair, and nails are all part of the same system, and we have to sort of think of this as one larger problem that is really important to all of us people who treat cancer, but certainly people who are undergoing treatment and their families. So the advice that Dr. LaCouture gave about moisturizing, certainly very valid. It is really important to remember that, as he said, it's important to moisturize after you come out of a shower or a bath. Moisturizers don't necessarily add that much moisture to the skin. They keep the moisture that was put in the skin from a shower or a bath on the skin for longer periods of time. So although you can certainly use creams for very dry skin during the day, their best effect is as a preventive measure after the skin is damp. So just it's important to keep in mind. Anyone who has experienced hair loss will also know, and again, prevention is the best thing here, is that the skin on the scalp is extremely sensitive. Although men think it's really cool to shave their heads now and it's really in, for a while it hasn't been. And for people who have lost their hair due to chemotherapy or in patches due to radiation therapy, that skin becomes extraordinarily sensitive because since we're infants, that hasn't been exposed to the sun. So using a good quality moisturizer and a sunscreen that has a proper SPF number is really, really important. I'll digress for a minute to speak about SPF, the sun protection factor numbers. There's a lot of misunderstanding out there about what these numbers actually mean. Many of us feel that the higher, the better. But as Dr. LaCouture said, for most purposes, a number of 30 applied more often every 2 hours or every hour if you're sweating or if you've gotten the skin wet is the best way to go. SPF 30 means that for every hour of sun with the skin protection on, you get the same exposure as 30 hours without. Excuse me, 1 hour without is the same as 30 hours with. It's just backwards what I said. So the number actually reflects how long you can be in the sun and absorb the same amount of ultraviolet rays without compared to not having any on itself. So an SPF 30 would mean you could absorb the same amount of sun in 30 hours with the lotion or the cream on than for 1 hour with the lotion or the cream off. Now, very few of us, practically none of us, live in a place that gets 30 hours of sun all at once. You need to be at the poles and in wonderful Norwegian summers, but most of us do not live in those circumstances. And as a result of that, having a number that's higher than that really makes no sense. It's great marketing, but it really doesn't make sense for us. We generally are out for a few hours at a time, and reapplying is the key rather than having a higher number. As Dr. LaCouture also said, that we're facing many of these questions now because there are a number of skin reactions that happen with the new targeted therapies. And if you feel like you're having a skin reaction, please be sure to bring it to the attention of your treatment team. Your treatment team knows who's in your area, which dermatologists in your area are the most experienced with skin-related side effects from chemotherapy or radiation therapy, and can send you directly to them for an opinion about what to do. As this was becoming evident, as more of the new targeted therapies were either in clinical trials or becoming FDA-approved, patients sometimes thought that there was sort of a whole set of different treatments that are out there for skin reactions to chemotherapy and radiation therapy. It does turn out that many of the, just about everything that's used are the same things that are used for regular, everyday, non-cancer-related skin conditions, dry skin, eczema, or skin infections. They're generally, though, used in different ways and sometimes in different combinations with a skin reaction from chemotherapy or radiation therapy. So seeing a dermatologist who's really experienced in all this makes sense. yes, there's a lot of juggling of different types of steroid creams or different types of low-dose oral antibiotics or different types of topical antibiotics, antibiotics and creams or lotions. But knowing the combinations to use, knowing how to switch from one to the other, and knowing which ones are not going to give skin reactions themselves, because sometimes antibiotics, when taken internally, can give a skin reaction, is really the key to figuring out exactly what's going to help each individual patient. So having somebody extremely knowledgeable and experienced in this is really key, and using your cancer treatment team as your referral base, they will know who in your area can really help give a good opinion about what to do. But you need to figure out exactly how this is affecting you. I've been through treatment with folks who are working very public jobs, and they're quite concerned, quite embarrassed sometimes, because they've tried not to disclose to lots of people that they're undergoing cancer treatment, and all of a sudden they have a bad skin reaction, and it sort of moves people to disclosing sometimes more than they need to, and sometimes speaking in your workplace about a change in the place that you work, you know, if you can work in an area that's not open to the public, sometimes that's possible, sometimes it's not, but going through the day and thinking exactly how this is going to affect you. Being in a cold climate, for example, requiring many layers of clothing presents different problems than being in a hot climate when you can have maybe a short-sleeve dress or a short-sleeve shirt on and not have a lot of material rubbing on the skin, but then you're subject to a lot more sweating and a lot more of the environmental pollutants than you would otherwise. So really thinking through with your treatment team exactly what this means to you and exactly how this can interfere with maintaining your functioning during chemotherapy and after radiation therapy and afterwards really makes the most sense. So it is back to the multidisciplinary team that really can help you figure out what to do and figure out who to go, see if that's necessary to try to find out the best treatments possible. One of the things that Dr. LaCouture didn't get to mention in the short amount of time we have is a phenomenon called radiation recall, and that's sometimes a combination of radiation and chemotherapy in the skin that can happen after one of those treatments is given. If they're not given at the same time, this can happen later. Again, this is something that's a known thing. It happens with certain chemotherapies, and radiation can happen months later in a site that's radiated. Make sure to notify your treatment team, the radiation oncologist, really understand about it. They know that it happens. They know which chemotherapies can cause this kind of late effect and what to do about it or who to refer you to. So radiation recall is something that happens. We know about it, and we generally can, you know, can help calm it down as much as possible. So as Dr. LaCouture said, prevention is important. Sun protection is important. Moisturizing is important. And getting to someone who really understands that the ins and the outs of this somewhat unusual but a kind of problem that really can interfere with quality of life is key here. I'm going to stop here. We'll have lots of time for questions and answers in a later segment.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Fleischman, for a very comprehensive and excellent presentation, really, and really highlighting the role of the multidisciplinary team and to all the additional information. So thank you. Very excellent. Thank you. And our next speaker is Sarah Kelly, and Ms. Kelly is an oncology social worker. She's coordinator of older adult services at Cancer Care. And Ms. Kelly is going to address Cancer Care's free professional oncology social work services that are offered at Cancer Care, and in addition to that, the role of support groups. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Ms. Kelly.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and I'd like to thank everyone on the call. I think we've got a lot of great information today. So as Dr. Messner said, I'm an oncology social worker here at Cancer Care, and I work with many people who are coping with treatment-related rash and dry skin and also their loved ones. And we've been talking today about managing your care, and I wanted to speak a little bit about how creating a support network is really part of that and how Cancer Care can also be a part of that. So just a bit about who we are. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization that provides free professional support services to anyone affected by cancer. Our programs include individual counseling. We provide that face-to-face in the New York area, and then we also do that over the phone nationally. We have support groups. We do those face-to-face in New York. We do them over the phone nationally. And then we also have support groups online, and those are both national and international. We have education programs. We have practical help. You know, we can help you navigate the healthcare system. We also provide some financial assistance as well as chemotherapy copay assistance. All of our services are provided by licensed master's-level oncology social workers. And as I said earlier, they're free of charge. Oncology social workers really are trained in how a diagnosis of cancer affects a person and his or her family and friends, really the support network. We're also trained to help cancer patients and their families tackle the problems that accompany the disease. You know, today we're talking about the side effects from treatment and how that impacts, you know, functioning, quality of life, even just how you're feeling about yourself since the diagnosis. So we can help with that. We also talk about financial demands and, as I said a moment ago, just the social adjustment and psychological impact in care. And I think that adjusting to and finding ways of coping with a diagnosis is a really important part of the healing process. And I would say it is right up there with treatment itself. It is a part of treatment itself. So many of you know who are going through this, cancer affects, you know, not just your body. It affects the whole person. And it also affects your support network. Asking for help by joining a support group or by contacting a social worker for counseling can be so helpful and really is a sign of strength. And that's something I want you to take with you today, that you don't have to do this on your own. You know, in joining a support group, you really are connecting with others who are going through a similar situation or having similar problems. You know, I can certainly tell you in facilitating support groups, these types of side effects that come up from treatment are discussed. And, you know, you may find in a support group, you may hear about many different ways that different patients are coping with the problem, managing it, kind of getting through the day with it. It's not easy when you're dealing with this type of side effect. And so, you know, we do talk about that and communicating with the healthcare team. I know Dr. Fleischman talked about that, and it's so important, being able to talk to the doctor, being able to go to the team when something like this happens, because the side effects are also, I mean, this is part of your care, and they do need to be addressed. So, you know, that is something that definitely comes up in the support groups. And also in the individual counseling, that really is a space for you to be with someone, to talk with them one-on-one, a licensed oncology social worker, and it gives you really your own space to do that. So I just think these services can be incredibly helpful. I also think that it can lessen the isolation that sometimes comes with a cancer experience. It's really a difficult thing, I think, to continue being connected, or at least it can feel that way when you're going through an illness. And, you know, I think the groups, I think the individual counseling can really help lessen that and can help you reconnect to the people in your network. So, you know, we're definitely here for that. And I think feeling well emotionally helps you better deal with the diagnosis. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about what we have available now, and I'm just going to direct you to our website, and also just you can call us on our helpline. We have a number of groups right now that are running. So in the New York area, we provide, of course, the face-to-face groups. I also mentioned the telephone groups if you're national, the online groups for those of you who are either in New York or national or internationally who prefer that type of modality. And with the groups, if you're interested in them, two ways to find out. One, you can go to our website, which is www.cancercare.org. On our website, I mean, it's a comprehensive website. There's so much on there. You will find a listing to all of the groups, all of our services, all of the publications, upcoming workshops. You know, it's just a great place to get information. And you can also find information about the groups on there and the different types of groups. So that's one place I recommend going. You can also call us. So our Hope Line is staffed by oncology social workers. All of us are on the line. You can always call us. And the Hope Line is 1-800-813-4673. And I'm sure those numbers and the web address are also in the information and literature you received. But, you know that we're here in terms of that. The other thing, too, that I wanted to speak about is that with these programs, we learn a lot. There's a lot of information to digest and a lot to get your arms around. We're here to help you understand what it means for you. So, you know, there's a time for questions, of course, during this hour. And then also, if you have other questions afterwards or you're not quite sure, you know, how to better communicate with the medical team or other questions come up, we're here. You know, we can help you prioritize. We can help you rehearse questions you may have for the medical team to help you better get the answers you need. So if anything should come up, you have questions or you need support, we're here. And, you know, really the thing I said earlier I wanted you to take with you is that you're not alone in this. You know, we are really here to help you. Thanks for your attention and the opportunity to talk today.
Oh, thank you very much, Sarah. That was a wonderful presentation and also wonderful information about the services that people can access from Cancer Care. And Sarah is one of our wonderful oncology social workers here, and she really represents so many of the staff that we have here as being so approachable and wonderful to work with. And now we have time for questions. We have lots of time for questions. I'm going to ask Stephanie to explain to all of you how to queue up and ask questions, and I'm going to ask you also, Stephanie, to bring all of our speakers on board so that we can actually, so they'll be here, so we can have them answer the questions that people ask.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking ask a question. Again, to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone.
We do have a question from one of our online participants, actually. We have a number of questions from our online participants. Since receiving cancer treatments, I can't seem to control my eczema. How can I control my dry skin in addition to my eczema? I've seen a dermatologist, but I'm not seeing any improvements. Dr. Fleischman, could you address that question?
Sure. There are a number of general principles here. There are many brands of moisturizers and a number of different types of steroid creams, many of which, except for one or two, the steroid creams are prescription items. On first glance, to someone who isn't too experienced with this, they all seem equal, but they're not. So the thing to do is to work with the dermatologist, and probably will need a number of other visits in order to figure out which family of moisturizers you're using, and then switch to another family, not just a similar ingredient in a different brand, but go from one family to another, maybe at the same time or maybe sequentially, I'm not sure, figure out which cortisone preparation you've used, and then switch to another family of cortisone preparations. In a cream. Ointments are generally not used, but again, that's just a generality, but more creams. And switching from one to another in this logical way and working with the dermatologist is probably the best thing you can do to get a handle on it.
Excellent. Thank you. And Stephanie, our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Mr. Emil S. Your line is open.
How do I tell the difference of itchy, dry skin, eyes, and mouth between the cancer meds that I'm taking and possibly a more serious condition that could be cancer-related and or seasonal allergies?
Emil, those are wonderful questions, as always. Dr. Fleischman, can you address that in a general way? And then Emil will definitely recommend that you, of course, see your healthcare team. But Dr. Fleischman?
Seasonal allergies, as most of us know, because many of us get this at certain times of the year when pollen or ragweed are prevalent in every part of the country or any part of the world. Seasonal allergies can both cause lots of mucus production in the sinuses and in the throat, as well as cause dryness in certain parts of the body. That's really hard to differentiate from the kinds of things that can happen from certain types of cancer treatment. For example, radiation to the mouth can either dry the mouth or cause lots of saliva and mucus production. And the same thing can happen on the skin and in other parts of the body. So if you've had allergies in the past, make sure your healthcare team knows that. That's more important than figuring out what it is rather than what to do, because often what is done is the same advice that you get if you didn't have cancer, which is to use a variety of different antihistamines or decongestants, some in sprays, some in pills. And again, logically going from one to another and staying away from some of the combination over-the-counter treatments, which have lots of sometimes acetaminophen or Tylenol and things that can build up in the system if you don't need them when we don't realize it. So using the things that are out there, but really thinking about it, a much more organized approach to make sure that what you're doing fits in with the chemotherapy and the radiation therapy you're getting. And because so many of these preparations are available without prescription, working with the team is important, because there still can be interactions between over-the-counter preparations and a number of herbal preparations with chemotherapy, radiation therapy, so it needs to be coordinated.
Excellent. Thank you. I hope that helps, Emil, and good to have you on the call. Thank you. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Janice S. Your line is open.
Yes. The only rash I have from my chemo is on my head, my scalp. And I had it in the mouth, but I have learned that soda and salt mixture is all I put in my mouth. I do have dentures, which I brush with other paste, but I do not put any kind of toothpaste in my mouth, and I have never had a sore in them in over a year by just using salt and soda 2 or 3 times a day. But my scalp, I have tried every shampoo I can find. If I wash it, my scalp every day, I can keep from scratching so. But I can't find anything that actually stops it. I have put vitamin E oil on it, and I look like a wax head.
So you'd like some help. Okay, right. You've certainly tried a lot of things, and I'm going to ask Dr. Fleischman if there's anything he can recommend. And we also, of course, will recommend that you, of course, bring these tips back to your healthcare team. But Dr. Fleischman, do you have any thoughts about itchy scalp?
Sure. Well, just another note. I mean, you brought us back to basics, and thank you for doing that, because things aren't necessarily better because they're in a special preparation, and salt water is something that we've used for time immemorial, back to the time when we got salt water from the ocean. That seemed to be helpful to many skin conditions. So bringing us back to basics is a good reminder to all of us that sometimes basics really can work, and you don't need a fancy preparation to do that. Probably the best thing to do is keep it clean, moist, and covered with a hat or a scarf or something until your oncology team can refer you to a dermatologist who can help out. And again, going through the very logical progression from one thing to another until you can get some relief. But clean, moist, and covered is probably the best thing, unless you're in a really, really hot climate when the covering can actually cause too much heat and too much moisture, which really get you back to the clean and moisturized.
And we have a question from one of our online participants. So my mother is suffering from chronic itching skin, and after seeing many doctors, we have found no relief from this itching. Do you have any suggestions for us? Dr. Fleischman?
That's a hard one again in general. Itchiness can come from a variety of things. Itchiness is a somewhat common symptom of lymphoma, as well as from the drying side effects of just about every medicine we use in cancer, as far as anti-nausea medicine, anti-emetic medicine, pain medicine. Some of the chemotherapies themselves can all cause dry skin. Antihistamines, again, the over-the-counter preparations and decongestants can often make us drier because they do control inflammation and mucus to some extent. Again, the same idea about using different moisturizers from different families, soaps from different families, things, very, very basic things. and working with your team to get referred to someone who can help guide you through that. Because most of us, when we are standing in the pharmacy and we pick up the labels, or the packages, and we try to read the labels, there are multi-syllabic names, all chemical names, that we're not familiar with. In the supplement world, because of the FDA guidelines as far as labeling supplements, it doesn't use those same chemical names. It will use the plant source. So comparing those two is extremely difficult for anyone except a biochemist, or you have your phone in your hand and you're trying to search the information online, because it's hard to know what chemical comes from what plant, even for people who are in the field. So working with someone who really understands what these different preparations are is probably the best thing to do.
Awesome. Thank you. And Stephanie, our next question?
Our next question comes from Regina G. Your line is open.
I am on vacation, and all of a sudden a rash popped up where I had completed surgery and radiation therapy. And I went to one dermatologist who wanted to do a biopsy. I'm just wondering what else this could be before I see my oncologist when I get back to my hometown.
Well, that's an excellent question, and, of course, the whole issue of being on vacation and having things come up. So, Dr. Fleischman, could you address both the vacation issue and then maybe some thoughts for Regina to kind of a framework to think about? And, of course, Regina will certainly advise you to go back, call your treating healthcare team as well. But Dr. Fleischman?
That's probably the first thing to do, call up. If you have a telephone that takes photos, you may want to actually send a photo of the rash to your oncologist or oncology nurse so that they can take a look at it. You know, depending upon where you live and where you go on vacation, if there's an abrupt change in climate from cold to hot or hot to cold, that's enough to give most of us a change in our skin temperature and moisture, because you can go from a place in the United States alone, not thinking about the rest of the world, from where the humidity is 100% to where the humidity is 5% in maybe a few hours or less. Where the temperature can vary by 70, 80 degrees, depending upon what season it is. So those abrupt changes, as well as just a change in the soap in the hotel, or if you're staying with family and friends, or the soap that's used to clean the sheets that you're sleeping on, can all possibly trigger reactions. So probably the best thing to do is to call your team, as Dr. Messner said, but the additional thing is to take a photo, if you can do that, or if somebody who you're traveling with has either a camera that can be with a picture that can be downloaded, or using a telephone that can take photos, send that back to your team and ask them what to do. Again, it's hard to know the exact circumstances, but the team should be, your care should be coordinated by your team wherever you are. And these days with electronics of telephones and emails, that can happen without having to get tests by a provider who doesn't know your whole case.
And this is excellent, Dr. Fleischman. And could you comment on the use of telephone versus email, depending on the severity of the situation, in terms of just being sure that one gets a response back?
Well, if it were me and I were going to send a photo of a rash, I would also give a telephone call and at least leave a message saying, hi, I'm away on vacation and I have this really bad rash. I'm sending you a photo and email. Here's my cell number, because the doctor or nurse may not have that. They only may have your home number. Here's my cell number. Please call me back and let me know that, number one, you've gotten it or you haven't gotten it, and two, what I should do. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Most important. So, in other words, if it's something very important, use the phone, but tell them what you're doing so that they'll be sure to check your email, and if it's a different email address or they've never seen your email address, let them know that as well.
Right. That's important because some people's email systems actually screen out unknown addresses, so knowing that the email is coming is okay. And although it's a little bit off the topic, if you ever go to an emergency room when you're traveling or far from home, after your condition is stabilized, if it's really severe, the smartest thing that can be done is to call your treatment team to get lots of information from somebody on the team who knows you and knows what treatment you're on, because that will help the people giving emergency care to be as on-targeted and safe as possible.
And also, although it doesn't apply for this particular caller, but for everybody on the call, because we are entering in some areas a much warmer time of year, and it is technically in some parts of the country also entering like summertime, but not everywhere in the world because we have people from all over the world. People may be taking vacations. Would you want to comment just a little bit about prepping for vacation when you're actually with your healthcare team so that you kind of have some things in place for you as things, expecting that things might crop up and how you might handle them?
Sure. Preparation is everything. And being prepared is a very good thing when you're traveling in the midst of chemotherapy or after radiation therapy, or if you have a radiation therapy break or even afterwards. It's important to carry a number of bits of information, put them all in one place. Nice thing about going on vacation or a trip is often it's a relief and it's a change of scenery. So if you put all this, you know, get this together and put it all away and not think about it, you have it if there's an emergency, but you don't have to look at it all the time because that can take the goodness out of a respite. You need to carry that your provider's names, their phone numbers, their email addresses if you know them or if you can communicate with them electronically, emergency numbers if possible. Best to, if you have a little bit of information about the cancer you have, the type of treatment you're getting, the names of the drugs, and because many of the chemotherapies are available in other countries under different brand names, having the generic names on all the medicines, the nausea medicine, the pain medicines, the chemotherapy medicines is really a good idea, and taking all this with you, tucking it away, but knowing where it is in case of an emergency is a good idea. So if you need to go to an emergency room, you're going in with the kind of shorthand information that can at least get somebody started on figuring out what's the emergency, how is it connected to the cancer, if it is or isn't connected to the cancer, and who do I call to find out more, who speaks my language. And that's probably the best way to go about this.
And I want to thank the caller just now for actually raising these issues, because actually wouldn't have covered it, and it's so important for everybody. And thank you for raising the issue of what to do when you are on vacation, because it prompted all this other discussion, which we wouldn't have had. And it's a help to everybody on the call, so we appreciate that. Now we have another question from one of our online participants, that question has to do with so it has to do with vacation. I'm on my first family vacation since my cancer diagnosis, and on a beach. I'm very excited, but I've been battling rashes and dry skin. How should I prepare for this different environment? Dr. Fleischman, could you address this?
Beaches are wonderful for vacation, but you need to really prepare when you're going to a beach after chemotherapy. Chemotherapy is still in your skin. Whatever other medicines you've been taking, the nausea medicine, the pain medicines are all in your skin. Each of those on their own can cause a sun reaction. It means that when the skin with the medicines stored in them is exposed to more than a little bit of sun, it can cause a change in pigment. It can cause a scaling, a peeling, or a swelling of the skin. And that usually comes with a certain amount of redness. So trying to be consistent with the kinds of soap that you're using, taking some soap with you instead of relying on the soap of the hotel or family that you're staying with, moisturizing and sun protection are really vital.
and just be covered up if you're within a few weeks after treatment. You want the vacation to be restorative, but you need to make sure that you don't get much of a skin reaction from whatever's in you. So covering up with regular clothing or sun protective clothing or being in the shade more than the sun. If you're going into a pool or an ocean, then showering off right afterwards instead of letting the salt or the chlorine or whatever else is in the pool to keep it bacteria free, instead of leaving that on your skin, shower it off. You may not get all of it off with just water without using soap, but at least you get most of it off that way, and you don't want to use too much soap because then that dries the skin and then moisturizing afterwards.
Excellent. Thank you. And actually, Sarah, could you comment about just in terms of the groups, because I'm sure that that summertime is a discussion in the groups itself and how people are feeling about taking vacations and how the group can be helpful to them in terms of planning.
Absolutely. So just a few things I can tell you that have been coming up as we're approaching sort of a warmer vacation time. One of the things, and we addressed this a little earlier, I know Dr. Fleischman did, is making sure when you're leaving that you've got everything, sort of all the ducks in a row and everything cleared away with the medical team. You want to make sure that you have your medications. You want to make sure that you've communicated to the team that you are going to be leaving and taking this break. That way they're aware of it. And then if something should happen, you want to know, okay, I can reach them via phone. I can reach them via email, you know, those types of things. So if you, for whatever reason, do have questions while you're there or if you should need care while you're away, they can then be a part of that. So that's a big thing. Another thing that comes up just around all of the things we've been talking about today is not only the physical discomfort of dealing with rash or even just with the hair, worrying about sun, nails, all of these things. It's also just how it can feel, the emotional discomfort of being on a beach and dealing with hair loss, dealing with rash on the skin, and what that might feel like for you. You know, for some people, no big deal, they'll just go out there. And I think for many people, it's a huge adjustment. And it's, you know, not such an easy thing to do. So it's figuring out what's going to be the most comfortable for you. There really is no right or wrong with this. So, for example, you know, if you do have a rash, one of the things that came up is, okay, well, you know, do I feel comfortable wearing my bathing suit? Should I wear something else? And, again, there's no rules with this. It has to feel right for you. So that's one of the big things that's really come up about just going on vacations, being out in warmer weather, exposing skin when there has been rashes. If you've had the nail loss, how do you deal with that? You know, those are just some of the things that come up. And, again, it's figuring out what works for you and what feels right.
Well, that's excellent. Thank you. That's really helpful, I think, to everyone. Just and having someone that they can talk to about that, that's really important sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you want to comment on that, having someone to talk to about that to plan, kind of figure out, get that permission?
Absolutely. So, you know, I think that that's huge. I think that, you know, being able to sort of talk through what's happened since, you know, you've had all of these treatment-related changes, and to talk through how you're going to navigate some of it, I think it really helps. It's oftentimes very difficult if we're trying to do it on our own. You know, all of these thoughts are kind of going through our head. It can be hard to organize them. And I think having another person there, whether it's, you know, a trusted friend or family member, an oncology social worker, or, you know, if you are in a support group, the group members who do absolutely get what you're going through because in many ways they're going through the same thing, it just helps you navigate. It helps you figure out, and you know, what's going to be the most comfortable for you. Because oftentimes we don't know until we're sort of talking it through. Okay, well, that might work for me, or no, I don't want to do that. So I think it really helps to have another person to talk to about this.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And we have another question from one of our online participants. And so this is a complex question, and Dr. Fleischman, would chemotherapy and radiation compromise the amount of sulfur in one's system? Would lack of sulfur cause the itching in post-cancer treatment patients? And, again, here we have a caregiver, someone who's calling about their mother, who'd had treatments, in 2009 and 2010 and is still suffering with this chronic itching, and has brought this to the attention of their healthcare team, but is still having this problem. So we probably, of course, we won't be able to solve the problem totally on the phone, but I'm wondering if Dr. Fleischman can just give some guidelines or suggestions that perhaps could be taken back to the healthcare team.
I think this is the first time I've been on a Cancer Care Connect call and been stumped by a question. off the top of my head, I don't know of any issue, either good or bad, with sulfur. I just, again, without thinking, trying to think it through logically, because there are metals involved with some chemotherapies, particularly cisplatinum, carboplatinum, I would guess there may be some sort of interaction, at least theoretically, if not in real life. But I think you'd have to ask your healthcare provider, and if you're dealing with a certified cancer center, there is a pharmacist in the team who is more knowledgeable about chemotherapy and radiation therapy and interactions than a pharmacist in a retail store or a pharmacist at a mail order pharmacy, and they would be the ones to actually look at your exact regimen and see if there's any sort of interaction or concern, if there could be sulfur collecting or, you know, sulfur being leached from the body. I honestly have never heard about any connection before, and you stumped me.
Okay. And sometimes that does happen, so we do definitely recommend that you go back to your treating healthcare team then and really discuss that with them. This is a first, but that's a good thing because there's a good question out there. We'll all put our heads together and try to figure it out and probably get back to you with that. But and please do call us as well. There is another question from someone who's had radiation for the breast radiation and are still, it's been a number of years, and still feels some sensitivity in the sun from the radiation and is really asking whether that's within the norm or not. And again, that would be a good question to ask one's healthcare team, but I'm going to just ask Dr. Fleischman to address this in a general way.
Sure. That's a known thing, but it's a somewhat rare thing. When external beam radiation is given in any part of the body, but particularly to the breast because the breast tissue is so sensitive, because there's so many nerve endings in breast tissue, the target is inside the breast, but the radiation beam has to pass through all of the external layers from the skin, the different layers of the skin, the dermis, the epidermis, to get to where the cancer either is or was, probably was, if somebody's had a lumpectomy or a breast-bearing surgery. Those outside layers can all have a reaction. Sometimes it's described as a burn. It's not truly a burn, but the tissue gets hard. Sometimes can get discolored, and sometimes if it's caught early and towards the surface and there's lots of cream and massage, that can be broken up. But yes, it's a known thing. It's not common. It's much, as far as being an uncommon thing to begin with, it was more prevalent years ago when the doses to the breast were different and the kinds of ways that the beam was pointed is different than we have now, because with computers it's revolutionized the way we can pinpoint things more than ever before, or using radiation seeds or intraoperative radiation to get the tissue inside without having to go through the outside layer. So it's known, it's uncommon, but even as an uncommon thing, it was more prevalent with older types of radiation. As far as what to do now, softening the spot, keeping sunscreen on it, are probably the things that I know of that should be tried first. And again, a referral through your oncology team to a dermatologist who may be able to think of something very novel.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And I want to thank our speakers today. This has been an extraordinary call. Wonderful speakers on the call, really extraordinary speakers, wonderful team, and wonderful participants on the call, really asking really such really incredibly good questions, actually outstanding questions, which really enhanced the call, and all of you who've been listening. I want to remind all of you that this is a one-hour teleconference, and that in planning a program like this, we recognize that you all have many needs that go far beyond the scope of a one-hour program. So with that in mind, I do want to bring you back to the fact that we do at Cancer Care have a number of different services that we have available to offer you with a wonderful team of oncology social workers who are here to provide ongoing support, and that translates into financial assistance, practical help, counseling services, both on the telephone and online, individual counseling and group counseling. We also have a number of these workshops that are coming up, and we, of course, have a number of them. Really, there are lots of them in the month of June and throughout the summer as well, so please, and more in May as well, so do kind of listen to all these programs. We also have a number of publications and fact sheets that are available, and, of course, a very exquisite website that has lots of information for you to access. So most importantly, as we conclude the program today, I don't want anyone to think that you're alone in coping with cancer, with treatment side effects, with rash and dry skin, with any of the issues that you're coping with. We want you to know that you're part of a community of support. I also noticed there were a number of caregivers on the call today asking questions on behalf of others. And you also, we provide help and support to all family members. And indeed, as we are approaching this warmer weather and vacation time, or even thinking about those things, do work with your healthcare team around these issues to maximize that time that you have, that you do take off and that you're away and that you might be more exposed to the out-of-doors and the sun. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and remember, you can call us at 1-800-813-HOPE, and that number is on all of your materials as well. Thank you all, and I wish you all a very fine day.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may now disconnect, and everyone, have a wonderful day.